There you go. All yours.
Thank you. Perfect. So that's great. So a little about me. I'm from Northern California. I'm from a smaller farming town outside of Sacramento. And so when I first moved down here, I was kind of blown away. It was right after college. I came down and, oh, there's so much traffic. And I've met a number of people who seem materialistic. Like, I'm not going to make it here very long, maybe 2 years. But then I got audiobooks, and that really helped with the traffic. And then everyone stopped being materialistic after I was here for a few years. Or I blended in. Something happened there. But I definitely love it. This is home. I've been here 17 years now, and I really do love this area. So I appreciate being here. I've had a lot of life events recently. I moved homes within the last couple months. Had a baby about 3 weeks ago, my fourth girl. I moved offices, so we moved offices at work a week and a half ago, and let's see what else. I have shoulder surgery next week, and then after that, I don't know what I'm going to do in life, right? Like, I've got to come up with even bigger events than that to keep it exciting, so I'm not sure. Another thing about me, I love dad jokes, so whenever I do our company all-hands meeting, I always start out with a few, so just know, here come a couple, okay? What has four wheels and flies? A garbage truck. Yeah. Let's see. What is red and bad for your teeth? A brick.
A brick.
Yeah. There you go. Nice. The other day I bought a step ladder and I never even knew my real ladder. I used to be addicted to the hokey pokey, but then I turned myself around. Okay. All right. Give me off. I'll go forever too. I need too many of those. But yeah, that's a little bit about me, okay, about Restaurant 365. So this is a company that I founded with two other co-founders named Morgan Harris and John Moody in 2011, kind of late 2011. We started this business. The three of us have been working together in the past, and we had been doing business solutions, primarily Microsoft, and we would create custom solutions, and we'd be called into different industries all the time. Just each client, we called ourselves opportunistic in that we would take any type of client out there. And so as we were doing that, at some point we came to this conclusion, to really have longevity and create something, we need to make our own solution for a specific industry that we don't have to reinvent the wheel every time, but we can keep it going. And so that's where we decided that we would find an industry. It took us about a year and a half or 2 years then, as we tried it out or looked into a few, to find that the restaurant industry had a need where our skills could really meet it. And it would be the type of system, because for me, I've always wanted to write an accounting software. That's like said no one ever. Like, no one wants to write an accounting software. I don't know if there's accountants here, but not the most enticing. But for whatever reason, I had worked in that, right, for a decade. And so I had seen things I liked and things I didn't like, and I wanted to create this system that worked better, but then we wanted to pick a certain industry. And so over time, we were able to look into a number of them, look into the restaurant industry. And that one really lacked the type of system that we wanted to provide. It was current, cloud-based, innovative, and all-inclusive of what we're providing. So we provide them accounting. We do inventory, recipes. We recommend what they should purchase, you know, a week in advance because of what the vendor's time is and what we project that they're going to sell next Wednesday on certain items. We recommend what they should schedule for employees. Have a mobile app that the employees all use to connect with each other, different things like that. It's a pretty robust system, all about restaurant management. So it's not something that if you go to eat, you would ever see. It's all back of the house and at their corporate office. We mainly work with people who have multiple locations, so not as much with one and two location groups, but more kind of multi-units and chains.
Lorraine? Is there another competitor with your software, or is it unique?
There's nobody can compete. There are other software companies, but a lot of them are 20 plus years, 25, 30 years. So a number of them aren't really cloud-based, or they're trying to get there now. And when you're not, you have to install things on site. It's hard to keep up with creating new features all the time, because then you'd have to get people to reinstall it, where we release something new in some way, like every 3 days on average. And so there's no way, if you were an on-premise solution, you can keep up with that. And if you introduce a bug in an on-premise solution, it's really hard to then fix and get back. So that's one of the advantages. Another difference is that we base it around accounting. So there are a number of systems out there that say just do scheduling or do inventory management really well. But our goal was to provide more of an all-in-one spot that's really the hub of the restaurant. So you see on our website we have a picture and we're kind of the hub, and then everything else that you have is going to end up here. And so that's a huge differentiator. So, yeah, good question. So that's what we did. And, you know, I wasn't a restaurant guy. And so what I do early on is go to restaurants, and I talk to the manager, and say, you know, late at night, 10, 11, when they're closing, and say, hey, can I help you count your inventory? They're like, what? Who is this person? And I just wanted to see what issues were there. How did it go? What happened when the servers were leaving at the end of the night? And how did you pay them their tips? And just all of those things. My only restaurant experience had been working at Little Caesars for 7 weeks when I was in high school. So I didn't have a lot. So I had to gain it on the job. And then I'd go back into the office in the morning and start writing the code for the solution that could meet some of the needs that I was identifying. And then we went over time doing that. And my two partners, it's great to have them. And they are more sales focused, and so they've done a great job at helping to grow the business. And so as we've done that, we self-funded. So with the three of us, we put the money in. I remember right when we got started, made a spreadsheet that showed that we were going to lose money. We were going to put personal money in for 3.5 years. And then we would start to come back up, but we weren't going to make any money. But we would stop putting in until 5 years at least, right? And so we looked at each other. I have this spreadsheet and said, what do you think? And we each talked with each other and then said, yep, we're in. We said, because we can't get to year two and say, we're not making money yet. We know we're not going to make it for 5 years. Are we really in? And we were. And so we did it. And so that's what we did. And then about 6.5 years in, we decided to take on venture capital funding as well to accelerate our growth at a different scale. And so, yeah.
How accurate were your projections?
They were quite accurate, actually. Yeah, it was in year five. At this point, with the funding that we've taken, we've gotten more aggressive. So we've kind of gone back the other way. But we were on our own dime, profitable and running it. And I'm really happy that we did that. A lot of software companies, especially in today's environment, take money from the beginning. And I think what that doesn't afford you is the ability to learn all of the dials you need to turn, right, to hone your business in. When it's your own money, you're really hungry and really to make it precise. And so that's what we did. But I'm so happy also that we've brought in some of these partners and taken funding. We've brought in some of the best VC groups there are out there. And it's been very exciting. Over the last 18 months, we've raised from Bessemer and Iconic and Tiger are the names of the three partners. And they've been really great. They're additive. They're helpful groups. We've raised about $130 million or so over the last 18 months. And we're charging forward. So, yeah, it's been very exciting. So I was going to check out who we have in the room because I do like to know that before I go, but now I know. So skip that. Okay, so let's talk about what we're doing today. My focus area is as CEO. It's nice being able to choose your own job, right, to write your own job description. And some of you out here, it sounds like from the intros, have done the same. So I choose, and I constantly make... It's a topic for another day. I have too many topics. I'm sorry, I talk so long, by the way. I make a quadrant, and I read out all the things that I'm doing, and then depending on what quadrant they fit in, it's whether they're going to stay on my plate or I'm going to build a team to do them, and things like that. But anyway, so the ones that I've landed on right now are maintain great company culture. We've been growing quickly. We double each year, employee count. I think 65% of our employees, they were telling me, have been there less than 12 months. And so when that happens, the comment about culture being key, oh, it is so key, because your business can fall apart, even if you have a great strategy, if you have a bunch of disoriented people trying to carry it out. And so that's something I'm extremely passionate about. And so a CEO, I'm not going to let that out of my grasp. So while I have teams that work on it, I work directly with them to make sure. You know, when we're picking an office, even little things like that, I want to be very involved in it, even though I've got great people to do it, because I care so much, I don't want to lose who we are, right? And I'll talk a little bit about what that is. The next one I decided is align everyone around our vision and goals and then hold everyone accountable to it. And so that's something that's very important to me. Very long topic. I'll mention goals very briefly later today, but that's like a full topic in and of itself. Have me back sometime. Exec team meetings and board. That's what I call the blocking and tackling of being a CEO. Those are kind of the normal. Yes, you have to hire leaders. You need to hold management meetings. You have to have board meetings. You need to inform the board of certain things. So I do those things too. But that one is probably the least exciting of all three of these. Are you recording this? I'm afraid my exec team is going to see this and be like, he doesn't love us. I do, really. And then the last one for me is long-term strategy. So what are we going to be 2 years from now that we're not today at all? that we're not even thinking about. So those are things that I'm also trying to accomplish. And so those are things I'm very passionate about, culture number one. And so that's what I thought would be fun to chat about a bit today. So disclaimer here, I'm mainly going to use examples from business, but this can apply to an entire business. It can apply to your team, if you're on a specific team or a manager of a few individuals, and it definitely applies at home as well. And so you'll see me tie in a couple things there, but I'll mainly talk from a company perspective. So elements of a strong culture. Now, it's the hint is not just stuff, right? So you ask people, what's your culture? And a lot of people say, oh, yeah, we get Friday lunch, or, you know, we do this. Or one time we all went to the beach and they gave us towels. Like, that's cool. And those elements can contribute to your culture. That's definitely not your culture. If that is your culture, then you're not actually, that's more flash in the pan stuff. And you're not going to have staying power to actually accomplish great things. If you want your culture to be, we're really cool and fun, that's great. But if you want your culture to be, we deliver valuable solutions, then going to the beach doesn't necessarily say that. Now, if you want to be, we deliver valuable solutions while having fun, okay, now you tie all of these things together. And that's what I'm going to talk about a little today, is how many of these aspects we can tie together to generate a fantastic culture. Okay, so for me, and I'll go into each one of these in a bit of detail, first, you need to know your purpose. Second, you need some core values. Third, attitudes and mantras. And I'll go into that. That's one that people don't necessarily mention as often, but I feel very strongly about that. Next, setting goals and measuring progress. And then last, benefits and perks. So let's jump in and look at purpose. What is a purpose? The purpose is your why, right? Start with why. So I love that book. I try to think about that in everything I'm doing. Why am I doing this thing? Okay? Because if I don't know why, then how, if I don't know where I'm really trying to go, your North Star, how am I going to get there? You know, how am I going to know I'm on track? So start with that. It should be a short and motivating statement, but make it realistic. Okay, so for example, on Restaurant 365, ours is we help restaurants grow. And our main goal is to create a system that drives efficiencies and visibility and recommendations to their business so that they can get efficient enough to open more locations. That's our goal. We want restaurateurs to open more locations. And so the reason I say, but be realistic, I was talking to one really successful software founder, and he was talking about earlier in his tenure at their business, and they kind of shot really big right at the beginning. They made a software for a certain industry, but instead of saying they were going to affect that industry positively, he said, you know, we're going to make the whole world happier. And it's like, okay, that's a little bit broad. Like, how do you really know you're making the whole world? Well, if we create this, and then it's used in our industry, and then some of the people who work in our industry are happier in their life, they'll be happier at home. And then if they're, you know, I'm like, no, get out of here. So that, for me, that's not a purpose of your business. That's just my own take of make it realistic, but motivating. And then lastly, if you're doing it for a family, this is mine, spreading happiness and eating lots of cookies. So you know, it kind of works. You should have a purpose everywhere that you go, I think. Okay, so that's the purpose. Next step, core values, okay? So these are positive attributes, usually a single word or maybe just a couple words, right? But positive things, they're few so people can remember them. You shouldn't have to have a big moniker so that people can list off your core values, or they probably aren't going to impact them as much. They should be tied to core strengths that you already have, usually, or that you really want to increase and develop. And so that's where you can build on it. If you come out and you aren't doing any of these things and you just tell your employee base our core values are X, Y, and Z, and you demonstrate none of that, it's not going to have staying power. I kind of mentioned that here. Can't be just words on the wall. You got to live them. And so you should use them in hiring. You should ask people if they, you know, in clever questions, if they live those core values or want to. And then you should also use it in firing when people don't use those core values. Right? So that's something that's really key to us. Sometimes we let go of our top performers because they don't fit that culture, and I view that as more important than one specific delivery. Ours are innovation, accountability, and family at our company. So innovation for us is driving everything forward in what you're doing, creating new in our product, but also as individuals in your job. I always ask people to innovate their job, and sometimes they say, oh, well, if I automated my job, then I'd be out of a job. You wouldn't have me. I go, do you think that the person who's smart enough to automate their position is the person I want to get rid of at this company? Like, no chance, right? So that's innovation to me. Accountability is easy. We do what we say we're going to do. You can trust us. And then family for us means two things. One, we understand as a company that there's more important things outside of the walls of your business. When you go home at night, what are you going home to? Whatever that is, that has value in your life. And so we don't want to have a work environment where you can't enjoy that. Also, it means when you join us, welcome to the family. We hope that we have a family dynamic and atmosphere inside of the company that's positive, that where we all have relationships and are connected. So those are our core values. Going forward, okay, attitudes and mantras. So that one's different than you get in a lot of books. By the way, I have gotten some of this from trial and error over the years. Before we started Restaurant 365, we had a different business that was the Microsoft reseller creating custom solutions. It was a much smaller business than Restaurant 365 is. But we were also able to try out and put culture to it. It was a company that probably reached about 25 or 28 people or so. So Restaurant 365, put it in perspective, about 350 now, something like that. And we're growing, probably next year we have 700, something like that. But over that time, I've also tried to learn by reading books to gather some of this info. I've probably read in the past 6 months 20 business books. You know, and I just gather things from it. I constantly am trying to gather knowledge and then apply it where possible. So that's where some of this comes from. The attitudes and mantras you don't find in as many books. But I think that there's an underlying element to your business, which is the attitude that people have. And I think it goes along with some sayings where people like it. They like to be able to say, oh, our crazy CEO, he always says whatever. And that has legs, and the business rallies around it. I notice that there are certain things I say or do or use in a presentation, and then I'll see our whole team starts using it. I'll hear managers saying it to their whole team later, and it becomes a part of who we are as a business. It builds our culture. And so I think that these are important to try to shape the attitudes and using some mantras that really stick to you, what quotes matter. So there's three attitudes that I've determined of successful groups. Pulled this from different books and different things that I've tried. Here's the three attitudes I think that people should have, and this is, again, in business or family or a small team, big team. One, we're connected and you belong. People need to feel that. Okay, so we each belong. We have value to add here. You need to spend time getting to know each other and trusting each other. There needs to be a feeling of some trust there in order to do it. Because what you'll accomplish is that people will turn down self-preservation mechanisms, right? What most people might call the politics in a business. And then they can put that effort towards solving problems, creating solutions. And that's so much more powerful than everyone trying to make someone else look bad or make themselves look better. Because once you feel confident and we're all connected, then let's work together to create something instead of trying one person to get the glory. So that's something that's really important. Communication is a key of that. You need to communicate regularly with others, and you need to also, in that, know how people communicate, because people are different. And so I try to put out to my teams that work with me, hey, here's a sheet of how I like to communicate. Like, if you send me an email, here's what I'm going to do about it. I'm going to read it. It's going to sit in my inbox until I've dealt with it. I like people to know how we can interact with each other. Or for someone who doesn't respond to an email immediately, you might think they're ignoring me. Well, that's just not their style, right? A good example of this, there's a movie, Jerry Maguire, and in it, he's talking to a wide receiver on a football team, and he's his agent. He's a sports agent. And he starts arguing with him, right? And they're going back and forth about how he's not supporting him well enough, and that you need to do more as my agent. And then the agent's yelling, him, I'm doing everything I can. You make my job hard because you say inappropriate things in the media. You know, you already make yourself look bad. I can't get you a good contract. And they're going back and forth and they're yelling. And at the end, the agent is like, oh, that was exhausting. And the wide receiver says, that's the difference between you and me. You think we were arguing, and I think this is the first time we've talked. And it's a good example of the fact that people have different styles, and so you need to find those, right? But that's a key element. We're connected and you belong here. So don't try to just purport yourself, but be part of this. Okay? So then number two, once that happens, then we can share the risk and the responsibility of one another. So if the business goes bad and it goes down, we all share that. It doesn't matter if it was Rich's fault, right? Because no matter what, we're all going to fail at it. And then the same thing, we have responsibility to fix it together. So if it was Rich's fault, and even if we all know it was Rich's, I'm sorry, Rich, but yeah, that flower was just drawing my eye. He has one on his lapel for those behind him. If it was, we still need to rally together as a group and then solve these things, right? And so that's what you see. We each raise issues, but constructively. And from the other side, we welcome feedback. So, yeah.
Is it all right if I interrupt?
Hit me.
I'm just curious. So for your company, do you usually find these people? or do you usually create these people?
That's a great question. We try to identify a lot of this in the interview process, but we create these people. So we take people, here's one way. Here's my trick. I ask people when I'm interviewing what they don't like about their current environment. And if people complain a lot or gripe a bunch and they hate their manager and this kind of thing, they're not a fit for us. I want someone who's already thinking, I'm an individual who can create my own circumstances. And so in that we do try to hire for that. But at the same time, we are all exemplifying this or trying to get better at it. And so that helps everyone to lift a little bit. So for example, how do you deliver the negative feedback? I see an issue here. Friendly front stabbing is what I call it. So instead of backstabbing, you're not going to someone else and saying that he did it bad. You're friendly. You come up right in the gut, and you just stab him to the face and say, you know what isn't working, Bill? This isn't working, and we need to fix it. And you talk to them about it as civilized individuals. That's how you avoid politics in a business, friendly front stabbing. I have friends seize my weight. So there's a good friend I have, and one day we were driving home. I was in his car, and I had gained some pounds. Yeah, I had blown out my knee, and then that was a great excuse, but after my knee was healed, I hadn't still made changes. And he turns over to me and says, man, remember what you used to look like in college? You know, and then he talked a little bit more about it. And so at the time, I felt a little bit hurt, you know, a little taken aback that he would mention this. But it really was friendly front stabbing. He wasn't doing it in a negative way. He was doing it in something positive. And I took that, and then I actually... over the next 8 weeks, lost 40 pounds. And it motivated me to make a change in my life. I'm so glad he brought it up, even though in the first 10 seconds I was not glad that he brought it up. Right? But that's what friendly front stabbing is about. And then we all have to be mature enough on the other side of it. How is it received? This is my mantra I always use with the team. Fist bump the messenger. So they have don't shoot the messenger, right? Someone's going to bring bad news. Don't shoot them at least. No, I'm going all the way over. Instead of just not shooting them, you should be fist bumped. Thank you for bringing that up. You know, I appreciate you for having the courage to recognize that about me. And so that's a very different attitude. And when you do that, it requires humility and confidence, both, which is interesting. Those two words don't seem like they go together often, but they completely do. And that's what fist bumping the messenger is, because you're humble enough to receive negative feedback and you're confident enough to know this doesn't mean I'm failed as an individual. It just means there's one element that I can do a little better at. So... the last statement that I always use, the other mantra, is ego is the killer of the best solution. So I love to tell people that. That's the I'll win my debate, my idea versus yours. I'm going to keep my kingdom. No one's going to get in and affect this. And so I like to say that a lot. And what I say is, if you think that you're going to win the debate, there will be two losers that day. One loser is whoever loses the debate, and then the other loser is going to be your organization. Right, your business, your family, whoever it is when you're in an argument. But if you're in there in a constructive way where you're not trying to win, but you're both trying to come together with a grander solution, then there's going to be no losers. Okay, so that's number two. Number three is we are aligned. So through our shared vision, we generate solutions and we progress together. Alignment is generally around goals and measuring those and what we can do once we advance beyond this quarter's goals. Do we set new ones? Do we have bigger, bolder things we're trying to accomplish? So again, I'll touch on goals very briefly, but that's what that one is about. Okay. Here's another attitude or mantra. I got to tell a story in order to get to this one. Okay, if it gets on the next slide is my next terrible saying. But here's the story. You see this tree here? This tree is... does anyone know what kind of tree it is? Oh, close.
Bristle cone. So like pine. White bristle cone.
Boom, you both have it. Yes, the bristle cone pine. So these are pretty rare when they get to this age. These are the oldest trees in the world. And there's a place between 9,000 and 11,000 in elevation on one mountain on the other side of the Sierras up to 395 where you can go 20 miles off the road and then you can hike here. And it's very dry and no one lives there. No one wants to live there. It's terrible. It's like a desert on top of a mountain, and these trees grow. And it's because of a lot of factors, they're all able to be the oldest trees in the world, about 5,000 years old. And it's fun to walk among them. It's quite the feeling. I'd recommend it sometime. But they look pretty neat. They're gnarled. They have different colors. I mean, 5,000 years, if you could really put that into perspective. I mean, 94 was impressive until I put up this slide right here. So... So the story I have on it, I walked around, it was so cool. But the story I have on it is this other one. So this other tree, there's a stump. And so when these were first discovered, these were just discovered, you know, they've been discovered by people throughout time. But for people in recorded history who were writing about it and studying it and scientifically, it was actually only within about the last 75 years. And so they came upon this, some scientists, and they say, this looks old. These are crazy looking. They go to one of these that said, that one looks super old. That's crazy. Let's study this thing. So they cut it down, and they take it back to the lab, and then they start counting rings, and they start doing other types of studies on it. And they were like, whoa, this was 5,068 years old, this tree that we just cut down, right? Okay, well, that's okay. You know, there's hundreds and hundreds of them right there in that spot, so you don't feel too bad. So they go, well, we got to check a lot of these. We don't want to cut them down now, so we're going to go just take core samples. So they go in and they start taking core samples. Hey, this one's 3,000 years old. This one's 4,000 years old. This one's 4,500. This one's 2,000. Okay, they test all the trees. None of them are as old. They cut down the oldest tree in the world. It was named Prometheus. They cut down the oldest tree in the world. Can you imagine if you were a tree scientist and you were the one who cut down the oldest tree in the world? I mean, your community's got to hate you, right? You have to feel terrible. What a huge mistake you've made, right? And you came in just swinging for the fences, right? And just chopped it. So why do I share this story? I share this story because one of the things we have to be is better informed, and so I've created this formula for success, GDA. So this GDA, that's not clever. I thought after the fact, now that I've used this in our company a lot and said it, I was like, I should have come up with something that rhymed or like letters that spelled something so people could remember. This is not memorable. But GDA, this is what we need to avoid cutting down Prometheus. Okay? We need to gather as much data as possible in a short time. Then decide quickly and act immediately. And then you measure the results by repeating, and you do the same thing. And through this method, you iterate through making 1,000 small mistakes and course correcting instead of one huge mistake like cutting down the oldest tree in the world that you cannot course correct. You can't salvage your business. You can't salvage your marriage, whatever it might be. And so GDA is another mantra that I like to put out there, an attitude that people are constantly, as I say, learning. This takes constant learning. So that's the don't cut down Prometheus law of GDA. Okay. Another one for positive culture is these guys. Carrying some super heavy gas cans. These aren't the real guys, but another story. So there's a very successful CEO I was talking to telling me about how they grew their business and what happened there. And they said that in the early days, they were on the third floor of a building, and it was a software company, so they had all their computers and servers in that room. It was a small room. They had them all there, and that's where they were running their entire business, and it started to be used throughout the United States over the internet by people, and it was all out of this one little room that you wouldn't think. You think you need to get it out of that room because that's a risk, especially because it was an old building. And so the CEO went to his tech people, and he said, how could we get this out of this room and host it on Microsoft or host it on Amazon or somewhere else? Where can we get this into a more secure place? And they said, that's about a 6-month effort. And he said, well, we're growing so fast right now. We don't have the resources. We don't have the time. We can't do this. But maybe we could start thinking about it, and then a few months from now we can start it, and we'll be there a year from now. Okay? Hopefully nothing happens in the meantime. So what happens? But a few weeks later, the power in that building dies. And it dies in a way where they can't correct it that day. So their site goes down, and this is money every day. And you know, you lose credibility as a software company if you were out for 3 days. It kind of kills you. So they run to the store, and they buy generators, gas-powered generators. And they have people 24/7 carrying gas cans, these 5-gallon cans, up and down the stairs, loading the generators. The generators are running it, and they're bringing more gas cans up. For 3 straight days, they have to do this. 2 days in, the CEO goes, we can't sustain, and we have no clue when the building is going to fix it. When, if we had to, could we get onto one of these other systems like Microsoft or Amazon or someone who's more secure at hosting? And his tech person said, I'll do the quickest job I can and see what happens. 2 hours later, they were in the cloud. Yeah. 2 hours later, and then their business ran. There was one or two hiccups from getting onto the cloud that quickly, but that was it. And then they were so much better off. And had they said 2 hours, you know, the week before, the power outage, it would have saved them a lot, and they lost some credibility with customers as they were down. So I really loved that story when he was telling me, and the thing that I take from that is urgency but not emergency, and stagnancy leads to emergency. So if you aren't making changes, you're stagnant. And if you do, you rot. And then something happens, you have to fix that rot. That's like big surgery. So that leads to an emergency situation that you have to solve. You don't want to be in emergencies. It causes you to make too many problems in the solution because you're not thinking through everything. And it causes everyone to kind of burn out if you have a lot of emergencies. So don't be stagnant because that leads to emergency. But you do need a sense of urgency in the business. Because he asked his people, can we get to the cloud? He had foresight, knew that there would be a problem, and they said 6 months. That's not urgency in this case. Maybe 6 months for certain things is fast enough. And so that's something I always try to drive home with our people. You need to have a sense of urgency, and that's going to drive your business. But gas can carrying does make for some great arms. I mean, that's a good workout right there. So at least there's that. Okay, here's one more. I believe personally that the biggest driver of a powerful culture is the feeling of growth. The feeling of growth, whether that is in the company, whether that is the individual, as I have here, there's many types of it. It could be the driving force that your product or your service that you're offering is expanding, growing, improving. It could be that your company is growing. It could be that your employee count is growing. People like to see more folks around them. But the most important one of these is personal growth. That's the biggest factor to a good culture in a business, in my opinion. And so how do you do that? Well, I'm not going to try to solve that for everyone, and it's different in different businesses, but just a few ideas. You can make it a part of your dynamic in many ways. One is to actually grow. So if you actually grow your company, that helps to have a feeling of growth. But even if you are the type of business that's really rapidly growing, you could still be expanding your product and service. Talk about bigger and better things. Talk about where you can be, what more you could do, and especially help individuals to set goals and grow as an individual there, regardless of what the overall organization is. And I think you'll be shocked that if you're helping everyone personally to grow, the organization can't help but grow because they are. And so one thing, you can encourage people to move jobs within the organization if you happen to be in one that's big enough. You know, that's one way to grow where a lot of times people I don't want to limit that, you know, because a manager gets so happy with their person. But if you just say, you know what, but I'm going to encourage people to grow, it helps. What about at home? Everyone likes a growth chart. I loved to look when I was growing up at the different heights that I was, right? And so why not create a similar growth chart with skills? What if you listed the first time that your child was able to make something for themselves, you know, in the microwave or on the stove or different skills that they're developing? It would be really interesting to have an at-home growth chart of personal growth. So not just physical. The last one I put is trees. I just put that because trees grow. So I have personally chosen trees as a way that I demonstrate growth at our company. You already heard me talk about a tree. I talk about trees all the time. I've hiked to many interesting trees, and then I use the experiences from hiking to those trees and learning about them to teach lessons. As you've seen, I did it once here. I do that in our company. So now there's all kinds of stuff about trees in our company. Sometimes people try to hack. They try to send emails phishing, and they'll say, oh, this is the CEO, Tony Smith. Give me your cell phone number and all your personal info. I really need something important from you. And it's not from my email, but if people don't look, you know, they get fooled. And so when I send a real email out, I have to preface it so people know it's from me. And so I always say, like, hey, just so you know, this isn't a phishing scam, trees. And people are like, oh, yeah, the trees, it's that guy. So I've hiked to the tallest tree in the world, which was a super adventure. I talk about that sometime. The biggest tree in the world. I've gone to a famous tree in South Carolina. I do all over the place. So it's really fun. But pick some things that could accentuate growth. That's what I think. Okay, we're getting close to the end, so don't worry. Okay, goals and measures. Like I said, too big of a topic to really go into detail today, so I'll just say this. Choose a goal mechanism. There's lots of them. There's lots of ways to set goals and measure yourself. There's lots of acronyms for them. But pick one and unify around it. Be deliberate about it. We use OKRs, which is what Google used and developed that originally, I think, IBM was using at one point, Intel. And it's become very popular among rapid growing businesses because it's a thought process of setting higher level priorities and then letting all of the people use their skills to actually drive the specific individual goals that are going to accomplish those priorities. We used to use one called Traction that was very detailed and very specific. It was more like checking the box. which is great at an early business stage or a smaller business. But there's lots of them. Pick one. Set bold but achievable goals and maybe one or two double downs. The double down is basically you set your bold but achievable goals, and then on one or two of them, out of, you know, maybe out of 15 goals, you say, what if I doubled that, right? And then you do, and then you see what you accomplish. And so far in my experience, from what, we haven't been trying this for too long, but from what I've seen, even if people don't get to the double, they get to one and a half. And so it's much better than if you set the one. Now, you can't do that on everyone, because I think that there's a psychological effect if you all have a bunch of goals and you never reach any of them. But you do that on a couple of the things that matter most to you, and you see where you can get. I have some stories about that, but we don't have time. Some other time. And then measure them regularly and recognize and celebrate success. That's my quick goal lesson. Lastly, once you have that, you can do benefits and perks. I just wanted to get from the room, what are some effective business benefits or perks that you've seen?
Half day.
Half day.
Yeah.
Half day Friday?
Yeah.
Okay, half day Friday. What else? Yeah, there's lots of little things. I don't think any of them drive behavior like what we've just been talking. We've just been talking about real culture, right? But I do think that when you then mix in these things, whatever they might be for you, then that helps to round out the positive feeling. We've talked about growth and goals and all of those hard-hitting things that I think really motivate and drive people. But you add in a few of these, and these are the ones they'll actually mention to their friends. A lot of times they won't even realize that the things that are actually the most motivating and driving and rewarding to them are the things we already talked about. But they'll mention these. So a few of them that I've tried, some of them good, some of them bad. I'll just throw a few of them up here. If you have a great office that provides collaboration opportunities, have spaces where people can walk, they can stand up, they can talk to each other, I've really seen that be pretty valuable. Flexible time off policy. You can say you don't accrue time off, you can take it when you want, we're all adults kind of a thing. But if you take more than 2 weeks, you're fired. figure out your own way to do that one. Stuff in the office, right? A soda machine, a golf set. I was just at an office yesterday, it's a huge software company up in LA. Meet with the CEO just so I can, you know, try to garner it. Like I said, I'm just trying to sponge off everybody all the time, right? And so I've probably met with 20 CEOs of companies that are north of $3 billion, just trying to find out what they've done. You know, can I get a little bit of that? How can I be them? So I was at one yesterday afternoon, and they had a golf simulator. I walked by this room, and there's people there golfing. I opened another room, and it was a band room. They have drums and this. Then they have a big sign that says no drumming until after 5.
Yeah.
But anyways, you know, they had one spot they call the heart of their business, and this heart is kind of where everyone can go to eat, and there's tables. And it really was. The whole time, there were people moving in and out of there. Anyways, there's different things you can do. Again, that does not make your culture, but they can add to it. Meals, maybe you get meals for everyone. Maybe you do it on Friday. Maybe you do it every day. Maybe it's once a month. Whatever it is. I like that one especially because I do restaurant software. Everyone go buy a bunch of food from restaurants. Make them money so they can afford software. Everyone can own a piece of the company. Maybe you give out some options to everyone. You know, that can be motivating as well. Culture crew. We created a culture crew where, you know, they're constantly thinking about. We took employees from each department, so it's a cross-department group, and then they're trying to determine some things that we can do as a business to elevate our feeling there all the time, our culture. So those are some benefits and perks. That's just a few. Company gear, that's a common one I see, right? Lots of it.
What about working from home?
Yeah. I have a lot of thoughts on working from home, and it's 8:21, so I'm not going to share them. I'll say this. I do it. We have it, and we have a distributed workforce, and we have offices. So here in Irvine, it's our headquarters. Out in Austin, we have about the same sized group, about 160 people out in Austin. So we have a significant office there. We have a smaller office in Denver. We have an office over in Palestine. And then we have a bunch of people that live around the United States as well. So I see it all. And the thing I say is, how much less effective is this individual in their role going to be not with all of us to collaborate? And so what I mean by that is not that they're going to be ineffective. I just think they will be less effective than if we were together. Now, hey, maybe it's only 3% less effective, so it's fine. And we do. We let a lot of people go do different things. But in my opinion, no matter what, I haven't seen it personally where it ever makes more than 100% effectiveness by someone going out. I always see it as a decline by a bit. But not terrible. And there's some businesses that build their whole business around it. I just think there's some magic to collaboration. Okay, so conclusion here.
When you say, sorry, collaboration, you mean face-to-face collaboration.
Yes, exactly. You can collaborate electronically, which we do. I mean, in our office, for example, we built a room that's a conference room, and it has TVs on the wall, and it has the cameras, and we're working on building the identical room in Austin, so when they sit there, it has a half table. It looks like you're looking across the table at the other people. There's ways to collaborate. I'm sure many of you have seen some of those. But I do feel like you always miss something. You don't see them when you're going to fill up a drink. You don't just pop over their desk for something quick. And some people would say, oh, but when people pop over, it makes me less effective because they interrupt. I would say it might make an individual less effective, but it makes the organization more effective. That's my take on that. Okay, conclusion. Clearly state your purpose, your why. Identify, communicate, and then live your core values. Create memorable mantras that encourage the right attitudes. Set goals, measure progress, and celebrate success. And finally, once you have all of those, throw in a few benefits and perks. So that's really my conclusion on how you create an award-winning culture. So with that, any other questions? You guys have asked them throughout. But
yeah, so two questions just right off the bat. What was the biggest need in the restaurant business that your software, whether it was cloud-based or not? I mean, I understand what you're saying is the updatability of being cloud-based mm-hmm. was something that was critical
yeah.
as opposed to going on-site. But what was the biggest need that you saw as far as the inefficiencies in restaurants that you guys were able to address?
Yeah. The biggest issue I saw is that the restaurant industry, most of them had not adopted much technology because it wasn't affordable enough. They were paying for it up front in a lump sum instead of a smaller monthly payment. So a lot of restaurants had not adopted much technology. And without adopting, then they were just running as well as they could think about it in the moment. And when they got to have, when you have one restaurant, that's fine because you're there, you're working on the counter. But when you have 3, 4, 5, 10, 20, it gets very hard because you're not there. And then you end up with disparate managers who are trying to make wise business decisions like how many people should I schedule. That's the thing they can control the most is their labor cost. And if you're off on that by 1%, that's kind of the difference between whether most restaurants make money or not, because it's a very thin margin business. And so you have these disparate workforces all spread out in their own little kingdoms running in very different ways. And so they need a heart of the business that can then be the hub where everyone is speaking the same language. Second is that there were restaurants adopting some systems, but they weren't very inclusive. So they were solving one or two of these needs. And so they'd end up with 4 or 5 different systems. And some people really love this specific thing of this one. And then they wouldn't really adopt the other thing that they needed to. And so what we tried to do was create something that basically started at the heart of corporate and then went out to everyone. So bottom line is, I would answer that by saying, somewhere in America, every 2 seconds, a profit and loss statement is run out of Restaurant 365. And that statement, though it seems lame, exemplifies why our business exists. So what it is that the accounting system that the accountants use at corporate, and usually they close the books at the end of the month, and then they send out the reports and say, here is how you guys did. Why didn't you do better? Well, it's the end of the month. I can't change that month now. I'd rather change it in the week of or in the day of, right? And so then you've got these managers in the restaurant either doing their own thing on paper, in Excel, or in a system that's different than the heart, than the accounting that corporate's using. But if you can get all of this into one system, then literally every day restaurant managers across the country are running the same profit and loss report that the accountants are running at corporate for their store. And so they're able to be making the decisions on the real-time data instead of at the end of the month they say, oh, I thought I was doing great, you know. And so that connection between all of these functions is what the restaurant industry lacked.
What is the most, when it comes to state by state, right? Because mm-hmm. I don't know your software, but there are some elements where just, you know, buying the fish is not a state by state, but there's some accounting elements and other things that you have to address on state by state because of the regulatory environment of that state. How are you guys addressing that? Because that seems massive.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, the biggest part of that I have punted on, which is payroll. Okay. So we don't do payroll.
Okay.
So we have partnered with ADP and Paychex and Paycom and all of those, and we have this direct connection
so you
with
have a
them
portal
constantly.
To go to ADP.
But we do not do payroll because that's where most of the changing rules are. Now, will I never do payroll?
Yeah.
I don't know, but, you know, don't quote me on that, but we don't today.
I can go back and
Yeah. In the back.
Yeah, so how do you guys find customers? And am I thinking, you know, franchise owners are harder to find because they're kind of tied into the bigger brand, or, you know, I don't know if it's, you know, you guys do trade shows, or
yeah.
How do you guys know on that?
Yeah, we do trade shows. When we started out, we started doing trade shows as one of our earliest marketing expenses. We got a website up. We made a little animated video that says, hey, here's who we are on the website. That was our first marketing expense. It cost $5,000. After that, we started going to trade shows. Trade shows have been very effective for us because it's a very tight-knit industry. The restaurateurs like to go to trade shows because people give food out there. So it's a good dynamic. So we hit about, we'll probably this year hit 60, 70 trade shows. Yeah, we're going to hit about one a week at least. So that's very effective for us. We also spend on, you know, on web marketing and SEO. Something that we've just spun up in the last year to year and a half is cold calling, so an SDR or BDR team. So we started out with a couple of those reps to see how it went. Now we have like 40. That's been pretty effective for us as well.
How do you identify those specific, you know, restaurant owners, I suppose?
There, you know, besides them coming to us at trade shows, besides them coming to our website and filling out the contact me form, which those are very heavy traffic drivers for us. We also, there's lists out there, you know, you can buy of all the attendees somewhere. Yeah.
At your location here in Irvine as well as Austin, when you guys were doing your tenant improvements, did you do open concept with a bunch of cube, like along the glass line and interior offices, or what did you do to create that collaborative environment?
Yeah, you're all welcome to come check out our office. We just moved in like 2 weeks ago, and I'm so proud of it. It's unbelievable.
Cool.
Like someone came in to interview, and they said, am I in Google? And I was like, we don't steal your personal information and sell it to people for a profit. What do you? Oh, you mean our office? Yeah, yeah, no, our office is great.
Not as big skinny jeans.
Yeah, no, but it is a good office. It's those buildings are all glass. The whole thing is glass. And then we put just a few offices along the window line with glass in front of every office so the light comes in. But then the major window lines, about 80% of the window line has no offices on it. And then that's where we have kind of tables like this with dividers on them.
Bendix?
No, that's our old office.
That's the old office.
Yeah, don't look at that one.
Don't look at your website.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah, we just moved.
You guys are the new Irvine Company Complex?
We are. Yeah, they were nice enough to kind of put us in a key spot there and throw our name up. So it's cool.
The new campus building?
No.
It's called Discovery Park, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, it's
right there by.
Yes.
South, just the side of
Quad. Yeah. Wood. It's 4-story glass.
Yes.
And steel.
That's right.
The Quad.
Uh huh.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. There you go. The Quad. Is it at Discovery Park or something?
It's anyway. Yeah.
They said both of those names to me. The Quad at Discovery Park. I think that's where we are. Right. You're willing. is that to eat there? Or is that to help them count inventory at the end of the night?
Whatever you need.
Okay, all right.
She's good at that.
Yeah.
She gets served.
Yeah. Okay. Good. She's skilled at that. All right. Anything else? Yeah. Thank you, everyone. It's fun. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. A little thank you from
awesome.
Us.
Great.
That was fantastic, very energetic. I think we all learned something. And we're going to take you up on these other things you have in the queue. So,
yeah, I talked too much. You guys saw it. So I have so much.
Appreciate it. All right, with that, back to our day jobs and to the gravel that's going to come flying at us as soon as...